Thank you for inviting me. My name is Dorothy. And, well, you know, after last night, I think I was going to change my story because it was so good last night. I said I have to come up with something better. And unfortunately, I've been shaking all day, which I always say that's God shaking the truth out of me. So you're going to really hear my story. So I couldn't come up with anything different. And what I'd like to do, I always like to talk about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I like to talk about what it was like because I've been in program 42 years. And so that's more than half my life I have been in program. And this program has done miracles. But I need to remember where I came from, because when I think about where I was and where I am today, it is such a big difference. It is such a miracle this program has done. And so I am going to spend a little bit of time on what it was like. And I need a timer because I need to see it. Okay. I need to see the time because I don't want to get lost in what it was like. You know, I can do that. Stop watching. Okay. And so anyway, what was it like? I consider myself to having been a compulsive overeater from the time I was a baby. And one of the things I found out was that my mother must have been having a hard time dealing with me. She had my sister a year and a half before I was born, and it was just too much for her. And obviously, my crying was, you know, I was a good baby, I'm sure, but whatever. She was having trouble, you know, with my little crying, and the doctor told her to soothe me, to give me sugar water. Guess what my substance I have to stay away from? Sugar. I'm thinking that because that was to soothe me, that was to calm me. And I got that from the time I was an infant. And so I would do sugar water. And I can remember even as a child, I like to take a spoonful of sugar, just plain, and eat it. Oh my gosh, that sounds gross right now. But, you know, but that's how it was. And that was soothing for me. And the thing about, I'm not going to hear a lot about my eating when I was young because I don't remember, I never associated my size with food. You know, it just did not ring a bell for me. And I don't want to tell you how old I was before I realized there was a correlation. But anyway, but I did know that people considered me chubby. And I didn't know why or whatever. And by the time I was in second grade, I was definitely overweight. Before that, I probably was more like a normal child. But by second grade, I was overweight. And there are a couple of things I think that were happening at that time. One of them was that my mother went to work, and I was really my mother's, like I was tied to my mother. And when I got into program, I learned the word enmeshed. And I had to learn in program that this is my mother's cell. This is my cell. That's her cell. This is my cell. That I had to pick my mother off of me, one cell at a time. That's how enmeshed I was with my mother. So when she went to work, it was very traumatic for me. And the other thing that was traumatic is that my family had moved into a neighborhood, and it was a neighborhood that was extremely prejudiced, and so I had to deal with a lot of things going on that were very upsetting for me. And you can see that I started putting on weight. And so one of the things I wanted to talk about that was something, because it does have something to do with my program When we went to that school, I was in first grade. It was okay first grade. Second grade, when you went to school, you had to wait outside and you had to stand in line. And you had the boys in one line and the girls in another. And when it was time to go in, you took each other's hand, whoever was beside you, and you had to walk in. Well, when I was in line, if the boy, there were certain boys who would not touch me because I was black. So then I would have to move back in line till somebody was willing to take my hand. And so I want to say that because when I came into OA and my first meeting, it was a big meeting, and everyone got in a circle to hold hands. And I thought, who's going to touch my hand? Will they touch me? Will they hold my hand? And so I would wait and see. I didn't want to reach out to anyone in case they would not want my hand. And so when I came into OA, I don't know if anyone didn't want to touch my hand or not, but whoever, they took my hand. And then I got hugs. And, you know, and when we talk about this theme is together again, hand in hand, that hand in hand was extremely important to me, that people were willing to put their hand in my hand. And that's literal. It wasn't, you know, that was a literal, literally, they were willing to put their hand in my hand. And I think it was interesting because I thought about that last night when they said, okay, let's circle up. I never even thought about when someone touched my hand. And I thought, you know, I just assume people are going to touch my hand. And I said, I guess if they didn't want to, they make sure they go to another part of the room. But, you know, it's one of the things is that I don't think about that anymore when I come into the rooms of OA. I expect people to, most people want to hug me and touch me. And so that for me has been very healing to do that. So when you say hand in hand, it's really important to me. But growing up, going on, so that I was putting on weight as a child. And so I was in fourth grade, I had to go on my first diet. And my doctor wanted me to lose weight. And so I went on this diet, and it's important to know because for the first time I was not allowed to eat what everyone else was eating at the table. I had to have my diet food. And so, and they were really nice about it. You know, here's your plate. We always ate dinner together. There was never such thing as you eat when you want. You sat down at the table at every meal and you ate it together. But my plate all of a sudden was different. And I didn't understand why. I felt like it was a punishment. And I didn't know what I had done to earn that. And so I had to eat this and eat this different meal. And I'm telling you right now, if you put beef broth in anything, I do not want it. That was one of the things I would have at lunch, was this plain beef broth. And it probably came from a little cube, a bouillon. I mean, it was awful. And the other thing they did, I had to drink powdered skim milk. Ugh. Oh, my gosh, folks. I mean, now that was, there should have been CYF. I'm telling you, that was punishment. But the thing that really bothered me also was that people began to notice me that I was losing weight. And they would say to my mother, oh, she's losing weight. And to me, that was shaming. Because what that meant was that there was something wrong with me. And now they were saying I was being made okay. And so my weight was something wrong. Being thin means something's right now. And so that was one of the things that I carried with me. So I had this food journey, weight journey, that was fourth grade, my first diet. I lost about 25 pounds, which did not put me at at the normal weight for my age, but it took enough weight off that the doctor was satisfied. By sixth grade, 2 years later, I was up to 160 pounds. So I put that weight back on and probably about 40 more pounds. And that's just the way it was. I didn't go on to do anything else about my weight loss until I was in high school. My mother took me to a doctor, and I was put on diet pills. So I was on diet pills for 3 weeks. I stayed awake for 3 weeks, and finally my mother took me to the doctor, and they took me off. So none of this was generated by me. Everything was generated by somebody else trying to help me, and I mean that, I really do mean that. They were doing what they thought was best. By the time I got to my senior year in high school, I realized that I was going away to college, and I'm telling you, I hated high school. Hated high school, okay? Just if you didn't hear it, I hated high school. And one of the things that happened in high school was also, it was all around my weight. And we had a humongous school. I mean, there's a lot of people in the school, and we had 5 minutes between classes to get to the next class. And I will always carry all my books with me, because if I went to the locker, there were some boys that stood in that area. And if I went there, they would say something to me. And so to avoid it, that I get all the books, make sure I didn't have to pass by them. And if you've ever been in high school, overweight or whatever, you know what I mean. And I think about that now. And I think about how, in that school of how many thousands of students, how many students really laughed at me, said anything. It's probably less than 1%. But the way I look at life and the way I looked at life, it didn't matter. I don't care if all of you were nice to me, said hello. It's that one little corner is where my focus went. And that one little corner controlled my life. I allowed that one little corner to control my life. And so that is, you know, was part of the way I was. I was extremely shy. I mean, extremely shy. And I didn't have, I didn't have a lot of friends, especially in high school, because I wasn't going out. When I was younger and in grade school, I liked to go out and play and whatever. And what happened at the end of my sixth grade year, before I went into junior high, I realized that my friends were not playing with dolls anymore. They didn't want to play with cutouts, and I did. I was not ready to move into a junior high. I wasn't ready to go out with boys or anything like that. And my next door neighbor, who was one of my best friends, moved. And so I refused to go outside for a whole summer. And everybody in the neighborhood thought I had gone away to camp. But what it was that I spent a whole summer inside the house. And there began this fear of going out in public. And I really developed a fear of going out into public, of being seen. And I had to go. My parents were not going to allow me to stay home from school. So I had to go to school. But when I came home, I would go into the house. And when I would go out, I would think everybody was looking at me and judging me. And it was a real paranoid. And I would have preferred to have stayed in the house by myself. And so it was a form of isolation. And that's part of the disease. It's a disease of isolation. And I had developed that by sixth grade. I also had this fear. I mean, I was really bound up with a lot of fears. I was afraid of people. I was afraid of what they thought of me. I was afraid of what they were going to say to me, how they were going to treat me. Were they going to tease me? Were they going to use some racial slur on me? I mean, whatever. Just stay away from, I was just afraid of everything. And when I got a little bit older, a part of my fear was I looked at the way you or somebody else did things, and I became afraid to do things. For instance, if you went, if you were skating and you got hurt and you broke your leg, then that told me you don't skate because you can break your leg, you know? So then if somebody had a friend and the friend and they went out and the person broke their heart, then it said to me, don't go out with people because your heart can get broken. And so I looked at everything that went wrong or didn't work out the way I thought it should, or I thought that life should, and I thought, I'm not doing that because that could hurt. And my whole thing was to avoid pain. Well, you know what that is, folks? That's called isolation. Yeah, it's cutting myself off from life because, you know, anything I could get hurt or could cause pain. But I didn't, my world was getting narrower and narrower. But that's how I lived, and that was my philosophy. Look and see what hurt you, look and see what was going wrong, and make sure I didn't do it. And that way I could save myself. Well, really, what was happening is I was eating. And so therefore I was thinking that I was saving myself from pain. But I was really in isolation. I was eating down my feelings and my fears. And so by the time I graduated, was ready to graduate from high school and go on to college, I'm not sure how much I weighed, but I was really one of the biggest people in my high school. And if I cannot go to college and be that same miserable person, and what it will take is to lose weight. But no idea, no sense about what that meant to really lose weight. So I went to a weigh and pay program in June so I could be thin by August. And when you are over 200 pounds, you're not going to be thin in 2 months. And so I went, but what happened is I did take weight off. I stuck to their plan. And so I wasn't going to be thin by the time I went to school. But I said, don't worry, I will continue this when I get to school. I know now how to eat. And so I went to school, and within, I think, about a week or two, I was back to my eating. Because then I had to deal with some other stresses in my life, and that was trying to adapt to a situation that was scaring me. And did I say I hated high school? But guess what? Let me tell you, I hated college. Hated college. And I mean, truly, I'd go home for breaks and it's time to go back, I would be crying. I would be crying hysterically. I didn't want to leave my mother. I didn't want to be, it was just difficult. I was so socially unprepared. But at the end of my sophomore year, I decided not to go back to that school because, you know, it was that school that was my problem. So I was transferring to a different school in Pittsburgh. And so I went on campus, and I looked around, and I had an epiphany. I was going to be miserable there also. And it just came to me, you're going to be miserable. So I decided not to transfer and to go back to the other school. But I decided to take a semester off and went back to the weigh and pay program. And this time I really worked, but I had more months. So I was losing weight. I did not get to my goal weight, but I was thin, the thinnest I had been since high school, I mean, maybe early high school, maybe like seventh or eighth grade. And so I remember I had this off-white pantsuit I bought. I went back to school. And so I thought, now I'm ready. And I had this cute pants suit. So I went to this dance. So I went to the dance, and this guy asked me to dance because I've lost weight. So I went to the dance, and the guy patted me, good try. And I thought when I lost weight, then that I would know how to dance. Don't you know if you lose weight? You just know how to dance because you took the weight off. It didn't work. And so then I realized that I know nothing about boys. I don't know how to handle things, but I know how to eat. So I started putting weight on really fast. Within a month, maybe, I put on 20 pounds and back to it. Now I don't have to worry about anyone asking me to dance. I didn't have to worry about being, you know, in that field, I mean, in that... in that, be out there with the girls and everything else trying to get dates. But even though, then I realized that there were people bigger than me getting dates. So maybe it wasn't my size. Maybe it has something to do with me. But I couldn't develop that fully. But I'm going to move on that quickly. Because I needed to talk about the isolation. Even in college, I was isolated. I have friends. My sister kind of got them for me, but that's a long story. I won't go into it. But I did have to tell you, the friends told me later they thought maybe I was retarded because my sister went and told them. I don't know what she told them, but she probably said, this is a backward child. Please watch after her. And so they were like, what? But you know what? I clung to those people. Because I didn't know how to make friends, but I didn't know how to take hostages. And they were hostages, and I was clinging to them. I clung to them for 4 years. And, you know, that's just the way I was back then. But in the meantime, the weight was coming on, and I never was able, I would go back to the weigh-in pay, and each time I was less successful. And finally, at one point, I tried something else. And every time, my ability to stick to the diet would get less and less. And finally, I got to a point where I thought, well, this is what I will do. I will go on a diet, take some weight off, and maintain until I had the willingness and the desire or whatever to go back on the diet. And I could lose some more. And then maintain, and then that way I could lose weight. Well, what happened is I go on the diet for a few weeks. As soon as I was off, I was back into the food. So I was never able to take the weight off. And I became a teacher, and every summer I would go home in the summer. I spent the whole summer in the house. I did not interact with people. I had maybe one friend, and she had kind of moved away, and that maybe I would see her once or twice in the summer. But other than that, I lived with my parents, and I never went anywhere. So this was my life. And then I do have to mention this, and then I'm going to get on to recovery. At one point on the job, there was a teacher strike, and I was part of it. You know, I was out with the rest of them, but my principal took it personally. She thought in this whole big school city that we were picketing her, and I was one of them. So when we came back, time to go back to work, she decided that she has something for each of us who was out on the picket line. And, it was harassment. And so in order to overcome that harassment, I thought, she doesn't like union reps. So I'll become union rep, and she will get me, and I can transfer. Otherwise, you know, you stay there, and she'll just harass me. But so I became union rep, and I think this is what she thought, oh, good, Dorothy. Dorothy's meek. She doesn't speak up. She doesn't say anything. This will be good. So I was union rep, and I really take things, if I'm in a position of responsibility, even though I don't want to talk or shy or whatever, I take it seriously. Now I have to follow through. So I was following through. People come to me, I follow through, and whatever. And so it was almost every day I'm talking to the people of the union about this, that, and the other this woman was doing to different people. And I, by spring, all I knew is that emotionally I couldn't take it anymore. And I remember on a weekend I was driving somewhere, I forget, I was trying to go to a meeting or something, some kind of place, and I started crying. I got hysterical. And I couldn't make it. And I was looking for a police officer to take me to the psychiatric ward. I could not stop. I didn't see one, so I made it home, and my mother gave me some tranquilizers, and and that would help me stop crying, and then I start crying again, she gave me another one, and then on Monday she took me to the doctor, who then gave me some my own tranquilizers with 30 refills, and so that, I couldn't go to work for a good week or so because I couldn't stop crying. And I realized that there's something wrong with me. There's something wrong with me, really? And so there's something wrong because everybody else at that school was being harassed like me, but nobody else was in the emotional state that I was in. And I realized that they had things they did. Their whole life was not focused just on work. And so I thought, what I need to do is get a life. And I thought, if I got a life, then that would straighten things out. But the real thing is that my fear of what can go wrong was just intensified. And I became afraid of my falling apart again. And I even thought about committing suicide. I was going to drive into a pole or a tree, and the only reason I didn't do it was because I know you weren't guaranteed to die. And so I didn't do it. I thought about getting a therapist, but I didn't know how to do it, so I just would take these pills whenever I thought things were going to get out of hand. And I didn't want to be on the pills all the time because my mother was on them. And I saw Valley of the Dolls for people who are older, if you saw that movie. And I didn't want to be hooked. So that's what happened. But anyway, okay, forget all this. So, but this is how things were going. What happened? And my weight was going up, and every once in a while I'd do something, but never anywhere get anywhere normal. And my family was, my parents were, I was the biggest one in my family, but my parents were beginning to develop their own food issues and problems, and among it was diabetes. And they were told that they there was type 2 diabetes, and each of them began with, you need to do something about your weight and your eating, and you won't have to go on medicine. Okay, they were going to walk, they were going to do whatever. It didn't happen. Next thing you know, they were on a pill. The next thing you know, they were on insulin. And then my father had these vision problems and everything else. And I thought, that's not going to be me. That's not going to be me, but it was going to be me. And I knew it. And I thought, oh my gosh, I had a much earlier start with this whole weight thing than they had. And I'm literally killing myself. And I said, I have to stop it. I'm going to stop it. I don't want to die. And at one point, I even went to the emergency room. I thought I was having a heart attack. And so I went to the emergency room, and they were like, they sent me home. It was probably indigestion, but they sent me home. And I thought, you know, this has to stop. I am now going to quit this eating because I am killing myself. Well, within a few days, I was back to the food. I'm thinking, what am I doing? I don't want to die, but I am eating and I can't stop. What is wrong with me? And I couldn't figure it out. So what happened, and I'm going to skip ahead now. Really, I'm now at program. So my sister came to me one day and she said, Dorothy, I think you should try Overeaters Anonymous. And I said, I saw it on TV once. And I saw a group of people, they were in a room, it was a TV spot, but the The people's backs were to the camera, so I didn't know who, you could not identify them. So they were showing these people, their backs were to the camera, and at one point they all held hands and said the Lord's Prayer. So my thought had been, I'm not praying my weight off. And so my sister came to me at one point and said, hey, we should go do Overeaters Anonymous. I went there. And I don't know what it is, but there's something different about that meeting. And this was my older sister. I thought the sun rose and set in her. Anything she said, it was golden. If she told you that the sun was blue, I would tell her she was crazy, but I would tell you, guess what? The sun is blue, because Darlene said that. And so she said that it was okay to go to OA. I went to my first meeting. It was June 19th, 1981. And we sat in this room. It was a small meeting, and the people did a newcomers meeting, because there were several of us who were new, and they told me that this was a disease, and I was powerless over it. And they told me how they were using the program to stop the eating. They were telling me how they were using the program to help their lives. And at that point, I didn't care what Darlene said. I was hooked. And I said, I am going to OA, because for once I heard and felt hope. And when I walked into the rooms, this is what I felt was his hope. Like, maybe finally, here was an answer, not only to the food, but to that mental illness, that isolation, and all the fear. I mean, I didn't know that was all that was going on until I got to my inventory. But, you know, I felt that my life could be different, because they were telling me how their lives had changed. And so this is what I think about when we say together again. That's what togetherness was for me, that for once I could go in and say, I don't have to be isolated, that there are people in these rooms who understand. There are people in these rooms who have gone through it and are willing to help me. So I went to that meeting. It was a Friday, and I think I went Saturday. I went Sunday, and then I went home to my mother, and I was trying to explain to her. I held up a carrot, and I said, you see this carrot? It has more power over me than I have over it. A little dramatic here. Carrots aren't that great, but I was just trying to make an emphasis, to emphasize that I was powerless over this food. And so I started going to meetings, and like I said, people held my hands, and what was more important, people remembered me. I was no longer this person that I walk in a room, sit in a corner, didn't say anything, walk out, and people never knew I was there. I could walk in the room and people go, oh, you're back, and give me a hug. And I'm telling you, guess what my favorite tool is? Meetings. Because that's where I get to see people smile at me and hug me and to tell me that they want me in the rooms. And that is so, so, so important to me. And I found that in these rooms, I have people that I consider my cheerleaders. And these are the people, I had some cheerleaders here today too. I told them how nervous I was, and they said, don't worry, look at us, we'll smile. And so I should have given them pom-poms. You know, whatever. But I didn't. So they're smart. So I said, I'll look at you when I get nervous so that you can smile and I'll know I'm okay. And so I have cheerleaders, and these are really people I think of. And it doesn't matter what I'm going through, they're going to tell me I'm okay, you're doing okay, it doesn't matter. Not that my behavior's okay or that I shouldn't do something about what's going on, but they have my back. They want the best for me. And that is so important, because, like I said, I went back to my college reunion, I think it was my 40th, and I was talking to people because now, you know, I can talk to people and everything else. I'll talk to, you know, I can talk to anybody now. But anyway, I was talking to this person said, were you in our class? Yes, he said, I don't remember you. And the person is trying to remember me. No, you would not have remembered me because I didn't talk to you. I didn't talk to anyone but my little group of people. And so I was not, no one remembered me. But it's so nice to come here to Seattle. And I was in Seattle in 2018 for 2.5 months. And, well, really, when COVID hit and I started going to Seattle meetings on Zoom, people go, Dorothy, I remember you, Dorothy. I'm going, yay, people remember me. You know, I can go places and then people remember me. And, I mean, it just feels good to be seen. And that's what happened in this program. I got to be seen. I got to be seen, and that encouraged me because I wanted so badly what I was getting in these rooms. I would do anything to get it. That meant I did go to that meeting on Friday, went Saturday, went Sunday, and went Monday. I figured I was doing 5 meetings as soon as I got in program. I wanted to do 7, but I didn't want people to think I was overdoing. And so I was like, oh, I do have a life outside of here. No, I did not. I had no life outside, and all I could do was wait those 2 days. I didn't go to a meeting to go to another meeting. I loved to read. I could not even concentrate on a novel. All I could do was pick up the big book, the 12 and 12, the couple of pamphlets that were in program, and all I could do was read and read and go, that is me, that is me. And it was just, OA became my life. And it was so important to me. And it really was what really got me firmly established in program. And I started losing weight And I don't know how long it took me to get to this size, but I got to this size whenever, maybe like a year or two, because I didn't diet. I just got a food plan that worked. And I've been this size for maybe -3, maybe about 39 years. And thank you. And over the years, and before program, one of the doctors told me I was pre-diabetic. Into the program, a doctor told me, you are disgustingly healthy. And that's what I want. I don't want to go out of this world the way my parents did. You know, I know I'm leaving this world. It's not a retirement place, but I don't want to go out the way they did. And for me, initially, this program was about abstinence and eating a certain way, and now it's not. It's about healthy. I want to be healthy. It's not about whether do I eat this exactly like that, do I avoid this, but is it healthy? Am I being healthy? Am I treating my body with love? Am I treating myself with love? And that's, to me, is my food plan. You know how, so my food plan is not perfect or anything, but I know that if I'm getting, things are getting like shady, like, no. You know, how am I treating myself? And that to me is extremely important. So about the fear, you know, I am not nearly as fearful as I was before I'm here. So, you know, I'm not as nearly as fearful. And, you know, there was a story in the book, Big Book, about the man who mastered fear. I don't know if anybody has ever read that story, but I really like that story because that man was afraid to go out of his house. And I think at some point he got to a point where he could walk a half block if I had to go home. And everything I thought about me, when I came into program, I was afraid to be seen. And truly, like, I would go out even, I mean, I got into program and everything did not clear up. Things did not clear up because I walked in the doors. Things started clearing up because I worked the steps and came to meetings and used the tools. And then I began to see things in my life begin to change. And so the man who mastered fear, he said that fear has not left his life. But what has happened is he no longer allows fear to rule his life. And so that was really important to me, that I can have fear, but is it ruling my life? If so, I need to think about it. It's okay if a Mack truck is coming down the road and I want to get out of the way. Healthy fear, you know? But there are other fears. Yeah, I'm afraid to get up here and speak. Not a healthy fear. You know, it's a fear. But so what? I'm not going to allow it to rule my life. You know, when I came out in 2018 to Seattle, I was afraid because I didn't know anyone when I came out here. I just came out here to experience Seattle and find out what Seattle was like and whatever. And I didn't know anyone. But one thing I did, so I made sure there was program here, because I'm not going to stay anywhere long term that there is not OA. But I knew that if I could find OA, I would have support instantly. All I had to do was show up in the rooms. So I looked, made sure there were enough OA meetings that if I needed to, I could get to them every day. And then I'm just losing my train of thought. Fear, okay. And then I'm thinking, well, how will I get around? How will I this? How will I that? And everything. But I thought, you know what? I'm not going to miss out on this experience because I'm afraid. I'm just going to do it and trust in my higher power. And so that's what I did. And I've done it. I went to New Mexico twice, one time for 6 months, one time for 5 months, not knowing anyone and staying. But I made sure where I stayed had OA meetings. And the first time I did it, I went to Santa Fe the first time for 6 months, and I got out there, and I went to the OA meeting, and I said, I don't know what to expect. What if they aren't the type of meeting I'm used to and ever? Well, they started reading the 12 steps and 12 traditions, and I started crying. I'm home, you know? And the format was not like I was used to, but it was okay. I was hearing program, and people were living in recovery. And when I left the meeting, I had phone numbers, and people welcomed me. And people hugged me, and they held my hand, and everything else. And so that, to me, is the power of program, and that's what togetherness is. Together we can. I am not standing up here able to speak to you, able to travel and everything, because I can do it. Do you know, I had to tell people in program, I'm afraid to do this, whatever. And my cheerleaders got around me and said, you know, you can call me from wherever you are. You can do this, and they would help me. When I lived with my parents for the first 4 or 5 years while I was still in program, when I first got into program, and when it was time for me to, I decided it was time for me to move, people in program helped me buy my house, and they did not give me a penny. I'm telling you, what they did was they helped me step by step to go through the process. I would say, I am afraid of this, I don't know how to do that, and they would help me. They would tell me what to do, I went through that and shared with me what they went through. And together, we bought the house, you know, and that's what this is. Together again means to me that I will have somebody out there, and I might not even know that person, but I just say at the meeting, I'm going through this, and somebody who never speaks to me or whatever will come up and say, I went through that. And I remember in that house buying process, I was telling this woman, and this woman said, you know what? You're a single woman buying a house by yourself, and it's different from someone who's married. And she gave me some, I forget, but some kind of advice and everything that was, okay, I know how to do this. I mean, I had support. Well, I did buy the house, and it was really nice. I had a housewarming. I was able to invite people. I had more than one friend, and it was summer. I had more than one friend, and most of the half the people at the housewarming were people from LA. And they were the people who I knew when I said I was going through this said, you can do it. We will support you. We will help you. And I wanted them to be a part of my housewarming. I bought my house in June, and when the snow started flying, the first flake of snow started coming down, I think it was about November, I went into a panic because now I'm living alone and I felt shut off and isolated. And it was snowing. And I remember calling up my one friend hysterical. I was crying. I'm living by myself. I don't know what to do. And so she said, I'll come over. I said, no, don't come over. It's snowing. There's a snowflake coming down. And so and I would go to meetings. And I would be crying. I broke up meetings crying. I mean, and if I, and that's one thing I was telling somebody, this morning, the speaker was talking about her tears, and I was telling her I am a crier too. That was one of the gifts of the program, is that I found that I am allowed to cry, and it's appropriate, and I don't have to eat down my feelings. And before program, no, I just stuffed it down. And I felt like working the fourth step and everything. When I worked the fourth step, it was like somebody had to get a hammer and chisel. Oh, is that fear from when you were in second grade? Because, oh, what is that? You know, and I had to chisel out all those feelings that were down there. And that's what program is for me. I don't get to keep those feelings. They have to be gotten rid of. And so if it's from when I was 2, if it was from when I was 8, they have to be dealt with. But I have a nice higher power who says, Dorothy, you're not going to do this within the first day, the first year, the first decade of recovery. We can do some of it, a good bit of it now, but we can do some a little later, and you'll be okay. I don't have to have all the answers in order to be well. I don't have to do all of it in order to be healthy mentally, emotionally, or spiritually. I just have to be willing to do it and to face the fear of what might come up. And I know initially there was a lot of fear, like if I start digging this stuff up, what will happen? And I know I was asked in it, and I was going to have a meeting at my house. And I had a big resentment towards this person, but I didn't know that before program because I ate it down. But I was abstinent, and this rage started coming out. I was telling people off, and I mean, there is no such thing as anger allowed in my family. And you don't say angry words, you don't express anger. And I found myself like snapping at people. And it was like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? And I'm in program. I don't know what was going on. And this woman was going to come to my house, and I just felt so angry. Whatever it was, I can't remember now. Whatever it was, I was furious. And I thought, I'm going to be telling her off. And then there's a 8th and 9th step. So I better, what am I going to do? So I said, well, maybe I should begin my 4th step and figure out what I'm angry about. And that's how I began my 4th step. I'm skipping around, folks. I hope it doesn't matter. But I began a 4th step because I knew that if I didn't start on that fourth step, when I opened that door, I was going to say something I regretted. And so I started writing about her, and then, oh, wait, my mother. So my mother started getting, oh, the anger. Someone in program had to tell me that I was angry at my mother. I didn't know. No, you're not allowed to be angry at your mother. Don't you know what a great, you know, she brought you into this world. Look at all the things she sacrificed. And, you know, I'm enmeshed with her. But there was anger. And I had to work on that. So there were all these feelings coming up when I became abstinent, and the fear of what's going to happen if I, like, with all these feelings, are they going to get out of control? And I have to tell you, I still had my pills, my 30 refills of tranquilizers. And I thought, okay, they're in that back drawer, so if things really do get out of control, I can pull these tranquilizers out and use them and take them. Well, recovery was when I finally took those tranquilizers and got rid of them and realized that I had something solid that could help me. And I am not against people needing medicine for whatever their problems are. I just didn't need them. And so please do not think I have anything against it. So anyway, this is really important. I was following program. I was doing whatever I could. I mean, anything people told me, I did it because I had no better solution. And I followed program. I was doing program. And I was beginning to love myself. I was beginning to say, wow, I can speak up. I can have a voice. And so I could speak loud enough for people to hear me. I really don't need this microphone anymore. I could really speak loud enough and probably people could hear me in the back. And I can remember my sister once, we were somewhere, she said, Dorothy, you never say anything. You never speak up. Why don't you say anything? And she went to a meeting with me once and I was talking. She said, I can't believe you talked. And yeah. And you all can be here till 10. I can talk now. And so, but Aaron will not allow that. Thank goodness. So, and I do want to see the talent. But anyway, so I can talk now. But what really began to happen is that I began to find out that these rooms allow me to speak my truth. And my truth isn't always your truth. And that it was okay. You can't put me out because the only requirement is a desire to stop eating compulsively. As long as I have that desire, you cannot put me out of these rooms. So what I began to realize is that I don't think, I have a different way of feeling about things than a lot of people in program. And one of them is, when I came up, I said, my name is Dorothy, and I stopped right there. I don't say I am a compulsive overeater anymore. And that is because of my spiritual belief system. And in my spiritual belief system, we don't say I am, unless it is my true identity. And my true identity is not, this is personal, please do not stop saying it. I decided to stop saying it. My true identity is not a compulsive overeater. That is a trait I have. That's what I will fall back to, but that is not who I am. I am a child of God. And so, and thank you. And I have to tell you, in case no one, you might not know Greek, but Dorothy means a gift from God. And so my name is Dorothy. That's who I am. And I remember when I first found out that that's what my name meant, I said, I hope no one knows, because people will look at me and they will say, what kind of gift is that? That's how I felt about myself. by in program, I came to love myself, to know that I am a gift from God, and so are you. And to see people as gifts from God, and not people to be feared, not people to hide from, and everything else. And so when I get up here, I say, I am Dorothy, and that's enough. And I still come to meetings, so obviously I know that if I don't remember that, that the food will be more important. And so I keep coming back. The other thing I wanted to say about Together Again, when COVID hit, I went into great fear when they said they're locked down. And I wasn't even sure, was I allowed to drive anywhere? Nothing was open anyway. And all I could think about was isolation. I am going to be isolated. And I was extremely fearful. And because I no longer can sit in the house and cut myself off from people the way I was before program. I need people. I need the togetherness of people. And I thought, how is this going to work? And I mean, I was truly panicking. And then people instantly started saying, doing phone meetings, because I don't know if people knew about Zoom right away. And so phone meetings were the way for me to be together with people. And then Zoom came, and I started doing Zoom meetings. And then somebody said, yeah, I used to live in San Francisco, and now I figured out I can go to a Zoom meeting in San Francisco. I'm like, huh? I can do Zoom meetings in Seattle. I was there in 2018. So I looked it up. Oh, there's university. Oh, there's Finney Ridge. And I started dialing into those meetings, and I still come to the meetings today in Seattle. And then there was a People of Color meeting coming out of London. Oh, okay, I'll go to London. And so I still go to London. And so I found that together, that there is no reason for me to be isolated in program. If I choose not to do face-to-face, that's no excuse. I can still reach out to people. There is still phones. There was this story in the Big Book about a man, I think he was from India, never made it into the rooms of any meeting, but he got recovery because he reached out, and it was by back then letters. And I remember that there was that point where, you know, they had for people in prison and whatever, letter writing, you know, because it had to reach out and touch people, because people can't do it by themselves. I can't do it by myself. I need you. And together, it's nice. I really like the energy here and everything. But if I'm not, if I don't do face-to-face, I need to figure out how to be together with you some way or another. I need your hand, either literally or figuratively, to help me through all the things that I'm going through. And, you know, I do have to do this one thing, and that is, there's a story in the Big Book I love, and it was called The Man Who Mastered Fear. No, I'm sorry, I did that. AA taught him to handle sobriety. It is the last story in the Big Book. And one thing he said that is so important, and I am going to read it, if I can read the small print. Okay, big book. And, oh, come on. Well, maybe I'm not going to read. I'll give you the gist of it. The story is AA taught him to handle sobriety. He said that he did not know how. The trick is not to stop drinking. The trick is to stay sober. He said it's no big deal to stop. He stopped millions of times, but he could not stay stopped. And he said the way to stay stopped was to come to program and work 12 steps and learn how to handle a sober life. And this is what program is teaching me and has taught me, that how do I handle the problems in my life? How do I handle the deaths of my family members? How do I handle the adversities that I go through? It's not here to teach me how to not eat this particular food. It's teaching me, when I choose not to pick it up, how am I going to deal with things that come up and not use food. And so I do that by coming to meetings. I do that by working with people in program, making phone calls, connecting, going to meetings. I still go to 5 meetings a week, but I tell people about it. I'm proud of it. And so anyway, but to me, this is what the hope of the program is. This is what recovery can do. I am not the person that walked into these rooms, no, 42 years ago. I'm a person who I love myself today. I know that if I'm back here in 42 more years, I don't think that's possible, but if I were to come back in 42 years, you would see a different person up here than you'd see today, because I will keep growing, changing, expanding, because I cannot not be better if I am working this program one day at a time. And so I really appreciate you listening to me, and I have about 50,000 other things to say, but that's okay. I appreciate you listening.